Welcome back to Retail Therapy. My name's Will DeFries. We're at the Wash Media HQ in Austin, Texas. With me in the studio today, as always, Barrett Dudley. Barrett, how are we feeling today?
We're feeling all right. You know, it was a holiday weekend for your boy over here, and we had some brisk weather. And the whole thing, the coziness, having the heater on, the long weekend, it kind of like tossed me right back into holiday mode.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like it's going to be hard to get back into the grind. You know what I mean? Like now, obviously when you hear this episode, I will have found the groove and be back on my grind. Mm-hmm. But like, yeah, I don't know. Right this second, right while recording, you know, it's I don't know. I'm still a little bit of the January hangover. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. It's been an interesting time. Like, you know, last week we had a short week, last week we didn't have a short week. It just felt like a weird week because we were on the heels of your bachelor party.
That's right, yeah.
And then going into this long weekend, we also had like just extreme cold hit Austin, Texas.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Waking up this morning after kind of having a lazy day yesterday, I had so many to-dos. And then like you and I switched our recording schedule for retail therapy this week.
Yeah.
And so like I just felt totally off this morning. I was like, I'm going to forget to do these random things. I had a vinyl that I brought in for our friend James who's borrowing it. And I was like, I'm definitely going to forget this based on how often I forget stuff that Randy needs from me. And it was just like things were just lingering over me. And I'm out of the office on Friday because we're going to a wedding in Nashville this week. And so everything's just compact down. And I totally get it. Like it feels holiday.
Yeah.
It feels like we're not supposed to be at work right now.
Right. Right. Did you forget the vinyl?
I remembered the vinyl.
Okay. Why does somebody need to borrow a vinyl? Is this like borrowing a CD?
Because it's not a digital file, Barrett. And so he has to borrow it in order to listen to it. No, I don't know if they're a group. I don't know what they are. They're called Berlioz.
Okay.
Berlioz. And it's almost like house jazz.
Okay.
And I think they do boiler room sets, and they're doing a boiler room set this upcoming Monday in Dallas, Texas.
Oh, shoot. Okay.
So if somebody's in Dallas and they're looking to go see kind of a cool show, I highly recommend going and seeing these guys.
Yeah.
But I bought the vinyl because I decided last year that if I really got into something on Spotify that was a smaller artist, I'd try to purchase something from them so that I could feel good about not just like giving them 1 cent per million streams.
I feel like borrowing vinyls, that's dangerous though. You might never see that thing again.
I know. I'm a little worried about it. Yeah. I'm a little worried about it. It's something I'm not willing to do because the vinyls that I have received from various people that are feeling temporary.
Yeah.
I can already see them never leaving the collection.
Right,
I'm not putting them into my app where I log everything.
Okay.
But there might be a time in my life where I'm like, you know what? This person's definitely not going to ask for this back. So it's just going in.
Kind of feels like you should ask for somebody's like ID or like another, like one of their vinyls.
I was thinking that when he returns it to me, I think I'm going to make a request that you got to give me one for now.
Right,
and so we always are in debt to each other at all times.
Yeah.
It seems like a good move.
I think that's the right way to do things. Yeah.
Well, I mean, Barrett, we've been complaining. We complain endlessly all through the fall.
Uh-huh,
like September, if you go back to September, you could probably cut a lot of isolated parts of our audio that are us complaining, just like
bitching about the weather. Yeah.
I wish we lived in New York where it's cold and you can layer. And then, like, we have all these statements about how we don't get to dress for winter.
Uh-huh.
Well, winter has finally arrived in Austin, Texas. It's about, 13 degrees outside? I don't know.
Mm-hmm,
it's freezing out.
Yeah, it's cold.
Has it lived up to what we've wanted?
So for me, it has because my absolute favorite weather. This is probably, you know, I love being on the mountain. I love to be in Colorado. I love going skiing. My favorite weather is cold but sunny, and that is what has been delivered to us several times over the last week or so, and that's my favorite. I like getting bundled up but still having the sun on your face. You pop on some sunglasses, you feel like you're going, like you feel like you're in the Arctic or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're about to go like do a geological ice dig or something.
Mm-hmm.
And that's my shit. I threw on my DMA hiking boots from Huckberry today, and I was a little bit worried after we saw it on our fashion ics last week.
No.
But then getting here, arriving at Wash Media HQ, I pulled up and I parked and I stepped out, and much to my surprise, there was ice, dare I say black ice, on the curb.
It's slick out there.
And I said, thank God I have on these hiking boots. Thank God I have the traction and the utility that I need right now to not bust my ass.
The hiking boots that you're wearing are capital H, capital F, high fashion hiking boots.
Yeah,
I don't
think
we need to worry about the hiking boots that you're currently wearing. I think it's more of like the people that are wearing like actual hiking boots, like to the office every day. And right. It's like, why do you not want to wear something a little less clunky?
Okay.
Not wearing Wave Runners to the office every day.
But yeah. Yeah, I went winter white on the jeans today.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, you did. Yeah. You did. You hit us with the Ame Michael Jordan sweater.
That's right. That's right.
Very happy to see that get unveiled after you took the jacket off today.
I brought this sweater on the ski trip, but I did not have a chance to flex. You know, it's because this one, you know, we notably, I checked a bag for a 3-day trip.
Because that was going to be my next topic. Right?
And I had to do that because it's like, you want me to carry on for this 3-day extended weekend trip? That means you're cutting me down in my prime to like one chunky sweater, and I needed to bring at least three. So I did. And then the chunkiness of said sweaters was called into question on this trip.
There were some chunk questions. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. But then I feel like that was from, you know, from a distance, people weren't sure just what type of chunk I was bringing. And then up close in person, when we got more, you know, into more intimate settings, people were appreciating the chunkiness that I was bringing to the table.
I personally questioned the chunkiness when I initially saw your first sweater unveiling of the trip. And I will say that once I did get a little more up close and personal with it, I realized, oh no, this is straight up chunky. He's allowed to do that.
Okay. Yeah.
Normally for a 3-day trip, I would publicly shame someone for doing a carry-on. Ski trips change this a little bit because there are a lot of things that you have to pack. I mean, it took a lot for me to get everything that I wanted into my suitcase and into my backpack.
Yeah.
If someone's bringing any extra ski gear, there's no way that they could do that. But when you were the bachelor, it was like, I'm not going to say a word about this because anything that he wants goes on this trip.
Right,
and so if he chooses to do that, then so be it. But were there any regrets on the return trip when we walked into the airport and saw just piles upon piles of bags at the Denver airport?
A tiny little bit. I check bags are free on Southwest, but I'll tell you what, I sure did pay for it on the way home.
I've never seen an airport look like this before.
Yeah, the coming back home, the Denver airport was basically in like the biggest clusterfuck I think I've ever seen at an airport, where apparently every conveyor belt that delivers bags to like the main place where the checked bags go and then gets them onto the plane, just all the belts, they had just shut down. They were broken from like 7 a.m. through the rest of the day. And so when we arrived at, I don't know, 11:30 noon, Southwest, which was clearly the most affected airline by this, I guess because, like I said, the checked bags are free, so a lot of people checking bags. And you had to wait in two 1-hour lines. At least they were 1 hour for me. I think they got worse. One, just to get the ticket for your bag, to get the sticker. And then another line that was equally as long, if not longer, to just drop the bag. And I've got videos. It's the wildest thing. I mean, it's just like every single like desk for check-in and all the entire Southwest check-in area is just like bags are just like piled. Yeah.
How long did it take to get your bag back once we returned to Austin?
It arrived so we flew back on Sunday night. It arrived Monday night.
Okay.
And then I went and retrieved it like the next day. And that was worth a $200 Southwest voucher.
Okay.
So,
okay.
You know.
Okay.
Kind of shook out okay.
Have you ever accepted like the high dollar amount voucher that they offer sometimes at airports?
You know what? It seems like every time they offer it, I have a great reason not to do it.
The last time that I was offered,
because I always want to. I was like, yes, give me free travel credit. Like I'm living for that. Like
they were offering $1,500 a person.
Oh my.
When we were leaving New York one time, but Sally and I were really on the last flight out of New York. It had been a New York weekend where you're just getting shot out of there feeling awful.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we looked at each other and we're like, you know, if we were at any other airport in the nation, we might consider this. But the idea of going and getting another $200 Uber after getting our, you know, $3,000 total credit, finding a hotel, New York's not the easiest place to just go crash on someone's couch.
Yeah, if they're not putting you up, mm-hmm. that's something that you gotta, yeah.
It became a difficult situation. I've also been at a gate before where there were two guys kind of leading the charge, and they told everyone like, hey, if you're looking to get this voucher, like stand over here. If you're not, then we're just bartering this entire time. And so everyone just held strong and made sure that the price was only going up.
Right.
And then finally someone completely went against code and broke and was like, I'll do it for $1,300. And everyone's like, we could have gotten way more, but it was a very entertaining time.
I feel like the Denver airport is notorious for this shit, by the way. Like, it seems like there's always something wrong. I don't know if it's just because all the lizard people down in the underground basement and tunnels and like all the elites down there, like
they hit the power source.
Yeah. They're using too much of the resources. And mm-hmm. so it's things are constantly breaking and going wrong there. But yeah.
I mean, you didn't miss much. The boys just ate sandwiches.
I missed a nice little relaxing lunch. Cooled the jets a little
bit. It almost wasn't relaxing though, because we were so worried about you making it in time, and seeing you sprint up to the Southwest gate with McDonald's in hand and just your backpack was so gratifying. It was just like, all right, we made it. Barrett, you didn't even have to like get on the plane after everyone else did and get a crappy seat. You would have been sitting next to me because I had one of the final middle seats open next to me. That happened twice on this trip. I'm a little worried that I'm an unapproachable plane partner, because I've had now two times where I'm like, wait, like what? There's one seat left on this plane and it's right next to me.
Yeah.
Maybe I just put out the vibe of someone who doesn't want to, you know, join up with like a family or something.
Well, it's all about where you sit too. I like to be as close to the front as possible.
Me too.
And so those are the middle seats that typically get filled last, because people are continuing to go to the back.
Yeah.
With that, you know, you can see the hopefulness in their eyes as they walk past mm-hmm. like your row seven, and they're like, I think I'm gonna get one. I think there's still a window or an aisle back there. And then they end up in the middle back there first.
If I'm alone, I'll try to get one of the two seaters in the exit row. I just don't like having too many people around.
Yeah.
Or if I'll try to get the extra leg room seat, which is just like probably the best seat on the plane, even though you don't get a
If I'm solo and I'm like late B's, I'll blow people's mind. I'll ruin their whole thing. And I love doing this, because I'll just like show up to row three and be like, yeah, I'll just take the middle right now.
Yep.
Don't even need to see what's back there. I'd rather be up close. You people look like you'll be okay. Like travel, row partners.
Yep.
I'm just plopping down in the middle right now. And you can always like their eyes dim a little bit, because you know, they're just hoping for that empty middle. Yeah.
When they give you even like an inch where they say like, oh, it probably won't be a full flight today. Maybe you'll have an extra seat. And then you don't get the extra seat. It's like, why even tease that to me? Why would you even say that in this situation? Like, I know that there's people in boarding group C, because I know there's guys on this bachelor party in boarding group C, or at least very close. I don't know. I'm flying this weekend and I'm not really looking forward to it, but I think that Nashville will be a little easier than the Denver airport with broken whatever. I couldn't stop thinking about how there was one dude who went out the night before and was like, whatever, it'll be fine at work tomorrow. And then he showed up and saw all the conveyor belts were just done. And I think he probably just quit and walked away, because that's what I would have done. Like, oh, wait, hold on. We got to manually bring all these bags to the plane.
Yeah.
I'm going to go find something else to do.
Are you back on South Dub for Nashville?
I am.
Yeah.
I am. I've got a lot of Southwest stuff going in the mix right now.
Okay.
Booked some refundable flights to Las Vegas right around February for, I think there's a big football game happening out there at some point. And so my wife and I decided to pull trig on some, use some points for maybe in hopes that one team makes it to the big game.
Okay.
We'll see. All
right. Okay.
Who knows? Maybe the Texans will go.
They could. Crazier things have happened.
We got a big episode today. Before we get into everything, just make sure you do everything that every good retail therapy listener does, which is follow us on Instagram at retail.pod, subscribe to the Substack so you can get all the links to everything, and watch the episodes on YouTube, youtube.com/Sunday Scaries Podcast. Barrett, I'm kind of in travel mode, if you can't tell by the early conversations that we've been having right now.
Yeah, I can tell.
And I'm in travel mode for a few different reasons. One is that we don't really have a lot planned this year, which is fine with me. I don't need to have a lot planned, because I know that things will come up and I'll get my days in. But I am traveling this weekend. I've got some potential stuff in February. But more than anything, we've recently sent an email to my friend Katie at Lux and Nix, who I've had on this podcast before, to discuss a trip to Europe for my brother-in-law's wedding late this summer.
Yeah.
And I know you've got a wedding coming up, which means that you probably have a honeymoon coming up as well.
Yeah.
If everything goes to plan.
That's right.
And I think if anything, especially during a dry January spell where everyone's just like kind of wanting to do other things that they're not doing, there's no better time to wanderlust than right now. And luckily for us, the New York Times dropped their yearly piece, The 52 Places to Travel in 2024. I'd like to go through some of these locations. Do you have anything on your bucket list right now for going to travel? I know you've been to Asia way more than me, which is zero times. And I just wonder, like, since you've been over there, do you have any other places that kind of stick out to you where you're like, oh, I'd love to go here?
Yes. While I've gotten to do some very interesting Asia travel, I've not really gotten to do like what I would call like bucket list Asia travel outside of like Tokyo. You know, that's definitely one of them. But like, I mean, the truth is I really need like a 2-week Japan trip.
Yeah.
High on my list just because my fiance Laura lived there growing up for many, many years, and it has always kind of wanted to go back is Australia. But that's another one which is like, you know, it's kind of definition of bucket list because I'm not going for fewer than 3 weeks. Right?
Yeah.
Like that's the thing. If you're going to take a 24-hour trip, you need a week just to get over the jet lag. So those are two that are definite pie in the skies. But then, yeah, I mean, like stuff like Thailand, Tahiti, Bali, like Bora Bora, like all those are like high on the list. As you I think are headed over across the pond to old Europe town in August. And we're trying to do the same for a honeymoon as well. So I think that we are pretty narrowed down to Italy.
So you're saying Amalfi retail therapy meetup when?
That's the thing about Italy though, right? Like, I don't know what we want to do in Italy yet.
That's the thing. Like,
there's like 4 or 5 or 6 different things to do there. So
my brother-in-law is getting like married in almost the same place as where we went to in September of 2022. And while we are very much looking forward to going back to that area, there's also the part of me that's like, I need to do something different. Like, do we need to go somewhere else in Europe? Do we need to go to, instead of going south down to the coast, do we need to go north up to Lake Como? Do we need to do, like, what can we do that's different?
Right.
And like, all signs point to us not doing the Amalfi Coast again. But like, I would love to go up to Lake Como, but I think it's like, also just crazy expensive up there at all times.
Yeah. That's definitely, Lake Como is probably towards the top of our list. And we were just looking at hotels last week. And they're up there. They're up there.
But then like, we've also talked to, when we were talking to Katie at Lux and Nix, we were talking to her about doing a little bit of maybe like the south of France. And then like the way that she kind of explained like, oh, it's going to be a lot more like party scene. And I was like, okay, I don't want to do the south of France anymore.
Yeah.
I can't handle that. And I think it's also outrageously expensive. I think all of these places are probably outrageously expensive to go to, but it is always interesting to see like what people are isolating. I've seen a lot of people not wanting to go to Europe as much anymore, wanting to do things that are just maybe off the beaten path more than what most traditional Americans do when they go to an international country. Everyone's going to like Italy or wherever.
Yeah, or France or wherever. So we did, you were at this party, we had a little engagement party, and Laura's brother and her brother's partner put together this really like fun game for us that we wanted to do, where like they set up like 4 tubes, and we had labeled each of them like a European country that we were pretty high on and considering for honeymoon.
Yeah.
And then we gave everybody ping pong balls and they could divvy them up how they wanted. And like kind of basically vote for us to help encourage us where to go. And so a lot of factors play into this. One, where have people been? That's where they want to send you. But the 4 that we put on our kind of like wish list, as it were Italy, France, south of France is exactly what we were thinking, Greece and Portugal, which was honestly maybe our number one, like heading into
Portugal
planning. Yeah. Italy ran away in a landslide.
Landslide
victory.
I knew your affinity for Portugal, and so yeah. I put my vote into the Portugal one. Okay. But by the time that I had voted, Italy was pretty much overflowing at that point. Yeah. And I was just like, everyone's just forcing Italy.
And so I think it's just like it's the wealth of things that you can do there, the variety of vibes that you can go seek out. You know, whether you want to do wine country in Tuscany or Lake Como or Amalfi or down to Sicily or you know, there's just like tons of different choices there. And then friends were kind of talking about, and I think they, you know, I can't remember, or somebody said it best, but they were just like, these other places are great trips. And I think this list on the Times is like a list of great trips, but Italy is like the best honeymoon.
Yeah.
And I thought that was interesting. And we have not been to Europe since we were kids, basically. And so, like, I think this is kind of like, we're definitely checking the box. But I've got a bit of like a barrier, you know, like for Amalfi Coast, because it feels oversaturated. It feels overdone. I feel like everybody's already been. They've already posted the shot of the hillside cliff houses on the sea, and like looks. Don't get me wrong, looks amazing. I want to see that. But at the same time, like, you know, I like to think of myself as like, you know, being well traveled and ahead of the curve. And so like, I feel like I'm 6 years behind the curve on Amalfi Coast.
I get it. Like, even when we went, I was like, oh, I feel like I've seen a lot of, like, when we were doing our boat day, we stayed in a place called Ravello, which is a little bit separated from the busyness of everything.
Yeah.
The hotel didn't have that many residents in it. And so it wasn't like crazy busy where we were really at all. And so that was nice. And that's where we did our honeymoon, and that's where we got to relax. But when we did our boat day and going by all these little areas and these cities on the coast, you kind of realize like, oh, I've definitely seen this photo a million times, and it doesn't make it any less beautiful in the moment, but it was kind of like, oh yeah, I'm not really paving the way for anybody right now. I'm kind of doing what everyone's done that I've seen on Instagram, whether it's an influencer, a friend, or someone else. But like, the only complaints I had were that we didn't take more time, and that, like, honestly, like, yeah, going somewhere that is kind of touristy does take the allure out of a place. And so when there's a ton of people just piling in everywhere and they're all speaking English in the accent that you're familiar with, you're just kind of like, oh,
yeah, that's kind of a bummer.
When we went to a Chelsea soccer game in London, I was looking forward to this. We were sitting in the supporter section that were hard to get tickets. And the guys that I sat down next to, I was looking forward to sitting down to some laddie bruvs. And instead, we sat down to the two guys who never watched soccer, and they were from America. And they were like, we just wanted to see what it was all about. And I was like, man, you have no idea how much I hate you right now. I was really hoping to sit next to a guy that was saying like words that I could barely understand, right, but I could tell that they were horrible.
Double stony on him.
Exactly. Yeah. And he was
just
wearing
slamming pints.
He was wearing the stony patches for the home matches, as the lads do.
That's right.
Yeah. Should we get some knee-jerk reactions over some of these that jump off the page at us?
Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to start, or do you want me to start? I got one that's just jumping off the page.
Hit me.
It's the first one. It's the path of totality in North America. I don't know if you know this, Will, and this is just an observation that I've made, but anybody over the age of 60, they love eclipses. They love astronomy. They love star stuff. They love planets. They love looking through telescopes. They love eclipses. They like getting their glasses. They like making the boxes. Mm-hmm. Like, the old people love this shit. They love it. They cannot get enough. The last time that an eclipse that happened, this was just a few months ago, right? Where we had the partial.
Oh yeah, I was at a record store, and I didn't really know what was going on because I forgot that it was happening. Mm-hmm. Everyone in the record store started evacuating from it, and at one point I just looked around and I was like, why am I the only person in this store, and why is it weirdly dark out? And I found an original like Grateful Dead version of Live Dead, which is one of their most legendary live albums. I found like the original version while I was alone in the store, and I was just like, I have to buy this? Like, I'm buying this overpriced record right now because I feel like the eclipse just gifted me this for some reason.
It might have.
Sounds like shit.
Yeah.
Brought it home and was like, oh, this doesn't sound good. This definitely sounds like an original version. Yeah, it was just not good. But I was like, this is my eclipse record.
Somebody probably let their friend borrow that one.
Yeah. James, I'm not a big eclipse guy. I don't think I'm going to do the path of totality.
Okay. Well, during the partial, I was like walking around my neighborhood, and I'm telling you, every old person was out in their driveway just having the time of their life with this eclipse. Anyway, come this year, my parents have already called me. They've been like, we don't care what's happening. We're staying with you for path of totality. Like, we're going to be there. And I will admit that this particular eclipse does have me jazzed a little bit, because Austin is in the path of totality, which is pretty cool. Pretty cool. And I just, you know, I am looking forward to this because we don't even have to travel to get there.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
And it's number one right here. So it's obviously a big deal.
All right. I'll get into eclipses and moons and stuff like that.
You got it for a true full path of totality like this. Like, this is kind of once in a lifetime, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm in. Here's one that's kind of, dare I say, basic, that's jumping off the page at me, but it's because everyone that's done it recently, whether it's been a honeymoon or whatever, has come back being like, it's just beautiful and perfect. You have to go do it. And it's Hawaii. Like, Hawaii is somewhere that's escaped me. When we were supposed to go there as kids, my dad ended up buying, he got like $100 plane tickets to London for the entire family. And so we decided to cancel the Hawaii trip. But have you done Hawaii?
I've not. And I have a pretty, I'm acknowledging that it's a trash take. I'm acknowledging it. But there's something about Hawaii, like I don't know how to say this, that when I think of Hawaii, I don't immediately go to like the amazing nature and like volcanoes and like all the incredibly beautiful scenery. I just think of like an overpriced Disneylandish resort.
I kind of understand where you're coming from. Is it because of like every single kid show that we watched when we were younger went to Hawaii for an episode or three, and like Saved by the Bell had their Hawaii episodes. Like, I'm pretty sure Full House had a series of Hawaii episodes. I wouldn't surprise me if like Boy Meets World had it.
Yeah, I mean, because and you're right. People that go to Hawaii, they can't stop talking about it. They rave about it, right?
Yeah, everyone says it's perfect. It's perfect. It's Hawaii. Like, yeah. Obviously, yeah. It's going to be amazing. And I just feel like it's time for me, and especially with having kids now, that would really enjoy being in Hawaii. Maybe they need to wait a few years, but like, it just seems like a place that I would like to at least get off of my list of places and be like, okay, that's either a place I'm going to return to, or yeah. I'm really glad I did it one time.
I do think that like I kind of have the sense that. It is a nice family spot because you're getting that Polynesian, like almost like Pacific Island, like you're getting that super exotic kind of look in water and plant life and marine life and all of that on a 6 or 7 hour flight versus a 15 hour flight.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's kind of what I've talked to Sally about when it comes to like Bali and places like that, where like I need to be sold on it because I think I can find beaches that are just as beautiful somewhere else that might be a little easier to travel to. Were you a little surprised to see Manchester, England on this list?
Yeah, but you have to think that this is just because Manchester, England just like will not stop pumping out Boiler Room sets.
It's true. Right? It's true. Everyone's just going to Boiler Rooms at all times. I was surprised to see this just because I feel like anyone that I've talked to is like, oh, you don't want to go stay in Manchester. If I say I'm a Manchester United supporter, they're like, you don't want to go stay there, though. Like, you want to go somewhere else. But I feel like Manchester's kind of getting like a second wind of sorts. I don't know. This is claiming it's all music driven, and maybe it is.
I just said, you know, it's this new Co-op Live music venue that Harry Styles is backing. And then let's see.
They're continue. Adding a Soho House there this year.
For those interested in emerging talent, the city will host two major Boiler Room sets this year. I'm just kidding. It doesn't say that.
We need to go. I was going to say, then book the trip because this is happening. But like, yeah, like they're getting a Soho House there. So like, I think it's probably going to encourage a lot more Americans to maybe be like, oh, instead of going to London, maybe we could go over to Manchester every once in a while.
I don't have a good sense of the geography of the UK. Like, how close is Manchester to London?
Far.
Yeah.
In UK terms, it's far. Like in American terms, it's not.
Would you fly?
Yeah.
From London to Manchester?
Take a train.
Or could you take a train?
We took a train when we were going up to the Scottish Highlands. We took a train from London to Edinburgh, and we went through Newcastle, which is also very north. And like by the time we got to Newcastle, I was like, oh, I kind of don't want this train ride to leave. I'm really enjoying this right now. And so it's not hard to get anywhere in England as long as like you have either a train or a car, because it's not a big country. What else do we have on here? I've been very interested as of late of going to South America, mainly just to zig while everyone else is zagging and going to Europe. Mm-hmm. South America is somewhere I've never gone. And while I've heard great things about Argentina, I don't know why, but you know, like when you're a little kid and you had to do reports on countries and stuff, and people always had like my buddy Max always chose Japan. Like he just loved doing projects on Japan. I would always choose Chile for some reason. I think it's because Machu Picchu was there. So seeing Chile on this list,
Machu Picchu's in Peru.
I mean, I'm sorry. But like, I would always choose like things on in South America that I was like, oh, I think that's cool. And for some reason, like Chile's always been somewhere. Maybe it's like the Patagonian part of it.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's always been on a list of places to go. I'm not familiar with O'Higgins. Not a place.
Okay, that's probably why I'm scrolling right past it, because I'm seeing O'Higgins, and yeah, that's not registering as Chile. Peru, also on this list, by the way.
It says, so a group of local cooks, winemakers, and artisan growers have joined to preserve their campesino, a rural farmer identity. In the late 2023, their initiative known as the Ruta de los Abastos began offering rural culinary experiences connect visitors to local beekeepers, oyster farmers, and other producers. I almost feel like the culinary experiences of a lot of places is becoming like a huge draw for just like being a beautiful scene. It no longer really gets it done for a lot of people. They almost need something like this in order to get invested.
Totally. I think that's millennial food culture basically kind of like coming into full focus as you know, all of us approach 40 and are spending more money on this type of international travel. It's like, yeah, we want to go to freaking Noma in Copenhagen, right? Like we want the visual beauty and scenery, but we kind of also want that reflected in the food as well.
There's like there's a satisfaction to planning like a trip and then getting like a really good reservation on that trip and being like, oh, this is the only time we're actually gonna be able to go to this restaurant. Let's go do this.
Right. I do think that I like what you're saying about South America. I got to spend some time in Argentina immediately after college, and it was great. I got to do a lot of exploring in Cordoba and Mendoza, Buenos Aires, Iguazu, and like South America's great. I would love to go to Chile. Weren't we? I think we were talking about on the ski trip how you can go to like summer skiing because it's Southern Hemisphere, so you can go like skiing during the summer.
Oh, yeah.
In Chile.
Yeah.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah.
And I feel like I feel like South America is probably the value play right now.
Yeah, I think
like
it
if
is.
If you want your money to go further, it's not doing so in Europe. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, I think you're right here.
Yeah.
Like they have Brazil on this list. They have, I don't know what else they have on here. I mean,
they've got Ecuador.
Yeah. Yeah. I see, these are places that like I just like I would never naturally be like, let's go to Ecuador. But I know that if I got like really into reading about it and my algorithm started just serving me a bunch of stuff on Instagram all the time, I'd probably be like Ecuador's number one fan. Were you expecting Montgomery, Alabama to be one of the 52 places to go to?
You know what? Montgomery, Alabama honestly makes more sense to me than Baltimore, Maryland. So I do know that Montgomery, Alabama has like, that's like the home of Billy Reid. They do another, there's like a cool music festival there as well. I'm not sure if any of that is noted in the Montgomery, Alabama pitch page, but yeah, you could probably talk me into Montgomery, Alabama before Baltimore. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. Is Baltimore really on this list?
It is. Yeah.
No offense to Baltimore. I'm sure it's great there, but I'm not going there anytime soon. I mean, the places in the United States on this list are kind of interesting to me, like Craters of the Moon, Idaho. I've only been to Idaho once and it was absolutely incredible, but we were there for work, so we didn't really get to like step out and do much.
Did you see the Craters of the Moon, though?
I didn't get to see the Craters of the Moon. No. Instead, I got to see a bunch of barley fields, courtesy of Budweiser, which was also really cool seeing how the beer was made, but like, didn't really get to go out and do it as much as we wanted to. I mean, I guess we've got, I don't know. This is throwing a lot of wrenches in my plans to just call it a day and let Sally just book like a really like easy vacation in Italy. Now this is making me want to go like, okay, no, now we need to go off the beaten path. We've got two kids at home. We're never going to go on a trip like this for the next however many years.
Yeah.
We don't have the excuse of your literal brother getting married. What are we going to do? Maybe I'll go to Normandy, France.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Pop on over to Mustang, Nepal, maybe.
See, that's if I'm in Nepal, it's going to have to be on a different leg of another trip. Like I'm willing to go. I went through a big Everest phase of like reading everything about Everest that I could possibly take in. I convinced myself that I could do it, even though I know that I couldn't based on how difficult it was climbing up the stairs in Breckenridge at altitude. I'm not really sure how people do these things at this point, but I got the travel bug. I've got it.
I will say one thing about this list. It's it kind of feels like everything is on this list.
Yeah, they covered a huge gamut.
52 is a lot of places, and I feel like everything is represented.
I'm
Switzerland, India, Chile, the Caribbean, a bunch of U.S. places, and then we've got all the Central American, South American places: Bolivia, Ecuador, El Salvador, Chile, like
what?
You know, like they're just everything.
What do you think
Uruguay
is the most likely place on this list that you would go to soonest?
Soonest,
yeah. Like, what do you think? What do you think you could fall into and be like, oh, this makes sense based on something? For me, there's two, and I'll let you think about it. For me, there's two. Ireland on here, Waterford, Ireland. I don't know where Waterford is, but I could easily see us doing an Irish jaunt during the trip.
Yeah.
And also just like my affinity for the UK, Ireland just feels like a natural place to kind of fall into. But the other one would be Manchester, just because like there's no, I have no shortage of reasons to make that happen. But I'm not proud of those two things, but I think those are the two most likely places that I would end up finding myself in the next 3 years.
Okay. So that's Manchester. And what was the other one?
Waterford, Ireland.
And Waterford, Ireland. Okay. All right.
Which let's see where this is. I don't know. I just think Ireland's definitely in play for me.
Man, there's an Italian spot on here called Massa Carrera. It's the home of the marble that makes the masterpieces. So I don't know where that is exactly, but it's got potential since I think I might be in Italy at some point this year.
Can you imagine how hard a fit pick would go in this like photo that they have right here? Ame is going to do a lookbook in there at some point in the near future.
They should.
Thank you, Randy.
Did we reach the buffer? We had enough time in between mentions to get the second bell ring.
Yep.
Thanks.
Yep.
Thank you for that, Randy.
30 minutes is the number, I think.
30 minutes, yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And then I'm going to rule out Path of Totality and all of the U.S. places, because obviously those are...
Yeah. Those are layups.
Those are slightly easier. Yeah, but I might say something like El Camino de Costa Rica. Which, you know, it's like I love a Caribbean trip. I love a beach trip. And I feel like it's probably time to maybe expand the horizon a little bit.
Okay.
Beyond Baja and Mexico and the kind of the super familiar Caribbean places. And, you know, if I can make something happen for slightly less money that kind of feels the same, then I would love that.
There's a lot of people going to Costa Rica, and not just in the last couple of years, like in the last, like, I feel like it's a popular place for especially Austinites to go down to.
Yeah.
I can see that.
But yeah, I mean, there's, like I said, there's so much on this list. There's so much that I would like to do on this list. So I'll toss out one more because it's always been high on my list, and that's Morocco. Probably my top African country that I would like to visit. I just see scenes from like Marrakesh and I'm just like that. I need to go there.
No, good friend of the pod, Brady, spent a little time in Morocco during a trip over there. And I was very jealous of it the entire time. My initial experience with Morocco was just from the movie Almost Famous, where Kate Hudson buys a ticket to Morocco. And all through high school, Morocco was my password for everything. And I misspelled it the entire time, which actually made it a better password in the long run. But that I was like, I don't even know. Like, I couldn't even point where Morocco is on a map. I'm just doing this because I had a crush on Kate Hudson in Almost Famous.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if we have any ski trips in our near future, but we were, as we were talking about at the top of this episode, we were boots on the ground in Colorado this past weekend. And I had some people reach out asking for some maybe tips on things to wear on the mountain lately. And I reluctantly told them, I don't know if we're the best people to really go through that because we're not boots on the ground at all times.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very selective that we find ourselves on the mountain. And I didn't even find myself people watching as much as I wanted to because I think I was too focused on like figuring out where we were going and just not crashing while we were skiing.
I would also say that like anytime we kind of mention ski or ski trips. This is a common reach out. You know, people always kind of like they want either the download or the report from what we're seeing out there, or they want the tips, or they want to contribute their own kind of like version of this. And I think that's one of the things that makes talking about ski fashion a little bit more difficult is because people approach it from so many different angles and there are a lot of different like avenues, right? So you have what, you know, you've got stuff that high-end ski brands are like pushing.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the same stuff that like your locals are rolling their eyes at.
Yeah.
Right. And they've got their own brands and their own looks that they're kind of going after.
There's so many different angles.
Yeah.
Too.
So there's just and then there's people like us that are like, you know, hope to get out there once a year. And we're just like trying to throw on a chunky sweater one time.
I used to
like,
be,
you know what I mean? So it's just it can be a lot to wrap your arms around.
As a formal local of a ski area, like, yeah, the locals definitely had their own look and you would start tailoring your look based on things that you thought were cool from the other locals. And then you would see the tourists come in and they'd all be decked out in like brand new whatever it is, whatever brand you want to choose, they'd just be decked out in it. And you could just tell, like, oh, this person has the most expensive rig on the hill, but they're probably terrible. And like, but then when you're dressing to go skiing or snowboarding, you also are like, okay, am I going to go with like the conservative look, or do I want to look like I'm like a bad boy out on the slopes? Do I want to go with like classic looks? Do I want like the new up and coming gear? And then like, how do you style everything? What do you do for mittens and gloves? How do you handle the goggle situation? Like, there's just so many different ways that you can take that all mean something when you put it on, that it just makes it really hard to nail down, which is why I think I've avoided it for so long. But I was very happy last night when I saw a recent favorite Instagram follow, Data But Make It Fashion. They did something for On the Slopes this season. There's been a lot of questions for her in the comments of like, how do you come up with this stuff? What do you do in order to figure this out? And I think she's got various ways with like algorithms and everything, but I'm just going to read what she said from this post. She said, okay, so this analysis was quite interesting to do. I took a look at over 300 best-selling ski looks across different e-commerce sites to analyze the biggest trends of the season. However, not all brands or sites have a bestseller page or allow you to sort items based on popularity or customer ratings. And so she went through and tried to figure out like the best selling ski looks for the season and analyze it all. And this is what she came up with. Monochrome is seen in 75% of this season's best selling ski looks. Did you notice this when we were out there at all?
I did not.
I didn't either. I actually thought it was the total opposite based on what we saw out there. I thought it was a lot of people that were mixing and matching, which I think is the more traditional way to go.
Definitely.
I almost think going monochrome makes you look like you're too put together and you're like only out there for your 3 days of the year.
Yeah, the other piece is like typically when we think of the type of monochrome outfits that I think we like and gravitate towards, they're very neutral. Mm-hmm. So they're either in like beiges or oatmeals, right? Which not a lot of ski stuff comes in. You think about what you'd want to be out there in for ski season. It's probably like blacks and navies and olives, right?
Yeah.
And like, let me tell you what, if you're trying to ski with several buddies, maybe you're on a bachelor trip, having identifiable colors on every person is huge, absolutely huge. Like it should almost be required.
So I never really have had to deal with this until we went skiing with as big of a group as we went with,
yeah,
where so we were all trying to stick together on a busy mountain.
Yeah.
And it's never been something that I've had to worry about, but like knowing, oh, Barrett's got a bright blue jacket on, I'm going to find him every single time. One of our buddies had like not that many identifying things on it. Right. And I almost had to look for him more the entire time. Cause yeah, I was like, no, yeah, we can't lose him.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So that's just one helpful thing about wearing like kind of either mismatched or like a pop color. Cause like, I don't know if I want to be in, you know, I have those that like lime green pants.
Yeah.
I take that back. I'd rock the lime green jacket with that. But yeah, I don't know that it's a look for sure.
I only heard.
I just didn't see. But to your point, I didn't see a lot of that anyway.
No.
I didn't see a lot of people going matchy matchy on the top and bottom.
And the one person that we saw go matchy matchy, which it wasn't monochrome, it was much more like detailed designs on everything. It was the one fashion comment I heard the entire trip of like, eh, I see why you'd go with the jacket, but you can't do the pants with that.
Right,
and
right,
I was like,
yeah,
that's a yeah, great observation. Like, yeah, yeah, it's too much with the pants like that. The next stat is one that really kind of surprised me just based on how everything's going. Maybe it's the mob wife in me. Mm. But fur was seen in 7% of this season's best-selling ski looks. I guess 7% is a pretty hefty amount considering
everything.
But like fur just does seem very top of mind for people lately, whether it's – I mean, I think it's mostly faux at this point. But again, this is one of those things where like this is for the opera. If I see someone skiing with fur on the actual mountain, I'm like, you're just doing a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. No, when you see like one of the snow bunnies coming down and groomed green, with like the cropped little ski jacket with like the big fur hood, we're not taking them seriously.
No, I'm taking notice of the people wearing the fur and I'm like, damn, they're bougie and baller and they're probably gonna be really fun at the after, but like, I don't think that that's going to be the best skier on the mountain for me.
Yeah. And same goes for guys, right? It's like hood on your parka bit is indicating to me that you're not doing tree runs in that fur lined hood.
No.
You know what I mean?
No. If you're bougie enough to have fur on,
you're not hucking it off a cliff in your fur lined hood.
Yeah. You're not sending.
You're not sending.
Come on. It said based off popular ski fashion of the season, based on a sentiment analysis she ran of online articles and posts, retro ski gear, colorful ski gear and puffer ski jackets were the highest percentage of articles and posts.
Yeah.
With colorful ski gear really being the top dog. And right, I do right. believe this based on what we saw. It's more color than I've ever seen on the mountain before.
Okay. All right.
Puffers, I'm kind of surprised, are as popular as they are in general.
So, you know, obviously this is data, but make it fashion, right? So, mm-hmm. and the looks that she's analyzing, like, I don't think that she's going to like REI.com and Sun and walking around Sun and Ski Sports.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
All right. I think that this is probably looking at like the higher end, where like a lot of the fashion that we're putting out there is designed for walking around Aspen, not necessarily skiing the mountain.
Do you, think, know, so like I'm still surprised by puffers. I've always been surprised since people have started to really get into them. And I think it was the Hailey Bieber, like when Hailey mm-hmm. Bieber started wearing them with like leggings and going out and that.
Sure.
I think that changed things for a lot of people. But like maybe it's the distaste for people wearing like Canada Goose jackets that aren't the puffers, that mm-hmm. are just kind of the more like shell jackets with the insulation.
Yeah.
But puffers are just so popular that it kind of astounds me that as many people are just into them, and that's kind of the default winter jacket to go to now. And it's not just for skiing, mainly for, like you just said, walking around or getting places.
Yeah.
But puffers have just become so popular in a world where I always thought that jackets with a more hardcore like outer liner were always just going to reign supreme. But yeah. People just like the puffer look.
I mean, for me, and I think for a lot of others, it's the easiest and quickest way to warmth, to genuine warmth, right?
Yeah.
Stuff some down in a puffer, and that is like, that's going to help you out rather than like trying to pile on five
You wore
layers.
A black puffer to the office today, right?
I did.
I wore a black puffer to the office today as well. Yeah. Like, it's just, that's what it is right now. Said patterns were seen in 25%. I believe that. Patterns seem to be everywhere. And like, yeah. I actually felt like I was in the minority of people when I was just wearing a blank black jacket and like very like blank blue snow pants. I was like, oh yeah, I don't really have anything going on here. But I think that's like just the nostalgia, the 80s, 90s, whatever throwback. It just kind of makes sense that people are into that.
Yeah. So, just to point out one brand that I was not familiar with. And I only know about it because, speaking of the matchy matchy look that our buddy called out, he lives in Telluride. And so he's got a little bit more, I think, of a pulse on it, but, it was Montec.
Okay.
And so we saw a lot of Montec. I did start clocking the Montec jackets, which have like a more angular look. They're a little bit like, a lot of them have like double zippers or do something weird with the funnel neck, a lot of color blocking. And there's a lot of patterns.
These are cool.
As well. And I'm honestly surprised that I kind of expected to pull this up and see all of these jackets be like $1,000 a pop. But they're, as it turns out, they're actually pretty reasonable when it comes to the price of ski gear.
I actually think that I think it's way cooler at this point to have like these smaller niche ski brands than it is to have like the kind of the old guard of stuff like Patagonia, North Face, whatever it is. These smaller ski brands are the way to flex on the mountain at this point.
That it's definitely the more local way. Mm-hmm. Like, is like finding these kind of, yeah, like you're saying, like the niche smaller companies that are doing,
it's like
some stuff that's a little bit more interesting, maybe a little bit funkier.
It's like when you're riding the chairlift and you look down and someone's got some local skis. It's like, okay, this person's dialed in.
Yeah.
Like they get it. They're not just here to ski. This is a part of their identity. They're supporting their local shops. They're doing stuff that the locals are doing. It's just part of it.
Yeah.
And the final note from her stats were that jumpsuits were seen in 13% of this ski season's best-selling looks. This makes all the sense in the world to me. Like the Lady Gaga photo that they kicked off with, like obviously people are going to go with that when it comes to like just trying to put out the ski bunny vibes or the 80s party vibes, whatever it is.
Were you bibbed up or just pants?
I have pants with suspenders. If you ask me how I would like to operate for my entire life, I would love to be bibbed up at all times.
Yeah.
I love having a bib. I like having the storage pocket right there.
The bib is like retro, but it's also like feels very modern to mm-hmm. me. Like mm-hmm. that's, it's a good flex.
We were talking, I got off the mountain a day early or no, a couple hours early one day when you decided to stay out there. And me and the guy that we were leaving with, we were talking and we're like, man, it's going to feel so good to show up to the operate party without any ski boots and ski gear on. But it's also going to feel terrible because we're going to look like we absolutely did not earn it. Like our buddies just went skiing without us. And we're just like the dorks that were like, all right, we're just going to go. We'll go get you guys a table. We were like, man, we're going to look really soft right now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's definitely something. There's something about being at Apres in the gear that you know, you earn that beer, man.
It hits so different to not walk back with all the ski gear to the house, though. It was worth it for me.
Yeah,
it was worth it. We got a couple more things on today's episode. This is actually adjacent to this. This is kind of an airing of grievances of sorts right now. Barrett, we brought some disposable cameras on this trip with us.
Yeah.
And I'm just wondering, in a city where we have places that will develop film in an hour or less.
Yeah.
Why have I not seen flex pics of all the homies on the mountain together?
Okay, well, I'm tossing the blame right back on the homies because I sat out the two disposable cameras. And on multiple occasions, myself included, blame here on me too. They were just forgotten. They were forgotten at the crib.
Yeah.
They didn't even make it out on like our big, big night.
Hand up.
When I was slightly overserved, just slightly.
This is on me, Barrett, because I was given one of the cameras at the airport and said, you're in charge of this. And then I looked down on day two of the bachelor party and saw it sitting on top of my backpack. And I was like, I need to bring this upstairs because I have not taken any photos yet.
We did manage to get through most of one, but it still has like five snaps left.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been carting it around, like, I got to find something. I don't want to waste the film.
Just do what I do and just take a bunch of pictures of your dog.
Yeah.
Like, that's when I have extra photos, but I'm really anxious to get something developed, I just immediately hit the dog because I'm like, I'm going to want these at some point.
It is on my list of things to do this week is to go get the camera, the one camera that we pretty much filled out, developed. Because I know the fellows are dying to see themselves in that beautiful graininess.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Film style, 1996,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Lens.
Why do you think, I know we talked about like when we did In-N-Out, I said like film photos are in. Why do you like, you immediately were like, we need disposable cameras for this trip.
Yeah.
Like, why do you think it's gotten so in? Because it's not just like people our age are into it, but it's also like the younger generations are all carrying around digital cameras.
Yeah, they're doing little point and shoot digital cameras. Or reusable film cameras, whether they're like, you know, kind of cheap starter ones or more expensive even. I think that there's always like an equal and opposite reaction to everything. So it definitely feels, it's like the cameras on our iPhones got so good,
mm-hmm.
that it's not that surprising that we're now finding something very charming and cool about photos that aren't that good.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I think that there is in that same vein, it's like when we take photos here, like right on our phone, when we want to grab a fit pic, how many photos is somebody taking of us?
A million.
A million.
A million.
Right? Like we want every angle. We want a 60 to choose from. We want like...
Oh, it's the influencer way of taking a video and then just doing the poses in the video and just pausing it on the high quality video that looks just like a photo. And then you have like the perfect, perfect picture. Like, mm-hmm. there's something really refreshing about taking a bunch of photos with a camera, getting the film developed. And then finally, when you get the photos back, most of the time, the photos that I'm most excited about are not the ones that turn out the best. The photos that I'm not the most excited about, I'm like, this is actually really cool. Like this was a cooler photo than what I thought.
Right.
I think it's because I'm not very good at shooting people yet. It's just not really what I'm good at. It's a lot easier to shoot a beautiful landscape and have a beautiful photo turnout. But like, I almost feel like the way that Instagram's gone and the way that like photo dumps and that with the way that people are operating on Instagram, the curated, perfect, like everything is kind of gone out the window now. And when you only have so many chances to take photos with a digital camera or with a film camera, it just makes it a lot more fun to get those done and like almost more freeing to post a bad photo of someone because it was like, well, this was in the moment and we only got one opportunity.
We got one opportunity. Yeah. We took one shot and then we got it developed and this is what it looked like.
Yeah. It's more of like a signature of like the time that you were in as opposed to like a perfect portrayal of it.
Right.
And I just really like it. Like I have so much more joy looking at the film photos that I've taken that were like, oh, I really liked this moment. I decided to take a camera out and intentionally take it rather than just like the millions of photos that we have all have on our phones that like you look at in the moment. I return back to film photos that I've taken because I'm taking them at moments in my life that I'm more into than I do to other photos on my phone because like I'm just not like those might go up on my Instagram story for a day, but I might never look at them again. Whereas like the film photos, I'm like, oh no, I kind of want to do something with this. It's like they're special times. And I feel like those special times, it's way more fun to have those special little like mementos from that.
Yeah. One, right. It's like when you're looking through your camera roll, it's like you get to stuff and it's, you took 125 photos. It's like, it's difficult to find things even, right. Mm-hmm. That you want to go back and look on because you've got so much to kind of sort through. Even just like with the habits of people on Instagram, you think about like how it seems to me like the photo dump is still kind of like the most popular way to be posting on your personal feed right now.
I think it is, yeah.
And that posting somewhere in between 4 and 10 photos at a time is giving people the opportunity, I think, to try to express a little bit more like authenticity and realness. And even though it's all still curated and kind of manicured, it's like we're feeling more comfortable with putting stuff out there that is unpolished. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, here's like a couple of good ones, but then a couple of random things I took, plus a meme that I think is funny, and then like a cool landscape, and then like one of my dog, right? Like, yeah. It's this mishmash of stuff that I think maybe is nodding to slightly more like real life. And so that kind of factors in with the digital and the film and all of that as well, is that it's all just a little, it feels a little bit more genuine.
Yeah. Yeah. Even if like, it does feel more genuine, but I can also hear people making the case like, well, it's not more genuine if you're taking these photos, getting them developed, taking all this time and effort to go upload it. Like, I would hear that argument and be like, yeah, you're kind of right. Like, you're kind of right. But at the same time, I'm like, if it does allow people to express themselves better, I'm all for that. I very much like the analog side of things lately. Like, I talked about my shift and how I enjoy the vinyl stuff, like the photography, whatever it is. There's just something more intentional about it that makes you feel more accomplished when you're doing something, as opposed to just like playing a song from your phone or taking a photo with your phone. When you have to earn it, much like an après ski beer, like there's just something that hits a little different in a good way. And yeah, it just feels good. But Barrett, I'm really looking forward to these picks getting developed, even though I think at altitude I get a little puffy. So we'll see.
Your boy was definitely puffy. So I think
there was a photo that got put in the shared photo stream.
Puffing.
I was like, damn, like, I know we were drinking and stuff, but like, I don't look great in this photo.
The altitude, the drinking, the poor sleep, everybody's puffing.
Well, what if I told you that we could reduce the puffiness of part of your body, Barrett, by using a little Botox? And I'm talking about your calves.
Mm-hmm.
Calf Botox is a new fad sweeping the nation, aka TikTok. Apparently people are getting Botox injections in their calves in order to stunt the muscle growth and get slimmer calves. I didn't realize we lived in a world where people were ashamed of their large calves.
Well, yeah, that's my immediate question. Maybe it comes from not having, you know, the most picturesque calves, but like, why do people want to slim down their calves?
I understand people wanting to I think it's like more of a female thing than a guy thing. I think guys want larger calves. And I think the ladies out there would like to have like slim, like leggy legs, but like, I'm not even a guy who, I know we talked about like a bunch of fashion icks and stuff like that. I'm not saying this is an ick from the male perspective to females, but like a lot of times when women are wearing heels, I'm like, you don't need to wear heels in this situation. It's very dressed up. Like, it's making it more difficult for you to walk from place to place. Like, you can wear flats. It's okay. Mm-hmm. But there is something so sexy about legs and like a high heel. And part of the reason I think it's sexy is because you see like the leg definition and everything. And so like, I don't want that to go away. I don't want people injecting their legs with calf Botox. Like, if you had sweaty calves, I might see the use case here because I did it for my armpits, but like, I don't want this to be a thing. I like seeing people's legs out there.
Yeah. 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 People just Botox and everything these days. I've heard of something similar, in the traps. Like in shoulders, you can Botox these muscles right here, like you know, right behind your neck, and it essentially kind of freezes them so that they atrophy and like slims down your neck and your kind of your shoulder line. So this is just be careful out there. As the article says, full long term effects are not known, as this is a new trend, but there is a potential in affecting your low legs and back. The calf muscles are important for walking, running and jumping, and also help with posture. So just careful out there before you go toxin your calves.
It says applying Botox to your calf muscles to make them appear slimmer will temporarily relax the muscles by blocking out nerve endings. Everyday exercises can be affected by this. It could potentially affect your gait/stride, affecting the way that you walk, run, or jump, depending on your anatomy. Yeah, I just don't think this is going to hit like a lot of other cosmetic surgeries are these years.
This is also just very, I just find this funny, but there's a before and after photo here, and it says before, what does that say? Before calf Botox. And then the next one is just after fire emoji.
The legs don't look that much different to me. Then I don't know.
No. I mean, I
don't
see
know if I want to jeopardize walking in order to
I
get smaller calves.
I see that there was a change, but I'm having a hard time saying that this change was worth it to potentially reduce your ability to walk.
Like,
you know,
this isn't even like, I just feel like people aren't even noticing this. Like, yeah. Are you like, if it's making you personally happy and you're not putting your life in danger, then by all means, like, do what you want to do. But if you're hoping to show up to a group dinner and have someone be like, your calves look so slim. Like, I just don't see that being a default place that people go to.
Yeah. Yeah.
To close things out today, can we talk a little bit about something that was very online this weekend? I'm not sure if this went across your feed as much as it did mine, but I've isolated some tweets from this. Were you seeing Josh Wine tweets pretty much everywhere?
I was seeing the Josh Wine memes did cross my timeline. I saw them. Now, I won't lie to you. I don't understand why they trended as hard as they did.
Brett and I tried to talk this out before today, and I think that part of the reason that this got popular was because someone said, there's a guy that tweeted something about how you need to stop drinking like certain types of wine and how you need to get with the good stuff, and he posted a photo of Josh, and a bunch of people were like, Josh isn't like okay. Great wine, so why are you posting this? That being said, I feel like we wronged this guy because I will put my hat on it, Barrett. I like a little Josh every once in a while.
Yeah,
okay. I'm not opposed to buying a bottle of Josh every once in a while.
Sure.
I've enjoyed numerous bottles of Josh in the past, and I will enjoy numerous in the future. So seeing a bunch of Josh wine posts kind of made me happy.
Yeah.
I'm not a big wine guy. I don't understand the flavor profiles of a lot of wine. It's hard for me to differentiate things. But now that I'm seeing all these memes about it, like all I want to do is just sit down and polish off a bottle of Josh.
I mean, you got to think Josh sales went brazy.
I posted a couple tweets from Twitter, obviously, on the Sunday Scaries Instagram story over the weekend when I was getting a lot of entertainment about this. Too many bottles of Josh we can't pronounce. Like, it's just great tweets. But Josh reached out and said, is there any way you could tag us in this? And I was like, I would absolutely love to tag you in this, Josh. Like, please don't ask for anything in exchange. Like, I will tag you and you can freely use this. But like it's just come from every angle. People are just being the most online of all time when it comes to Josh.
Yeah, they it really did trickle into like every single Twitter arena that people could think of, you know.
Every Drake and Josh reference that people could make, they did. They just found like one guy just watching Drake on TV and drinking Josh. Like I'm okay with that. I never went through a Drake and Josh phase. That feels more Randy. What was the premise of Drake and Josh?
The premise of Drake and Josh that they were like new stepbrothers that had just moved in together. They're like the same age, so they were like learning to be brothers and friends.
We even got a tweet that that popped up, and you know, you were in a fraternity, Barrett. So you know, this one says this was from 2019, but it got re-brought up on the TL because of the popularity of Josh. But it just says, when the frat house says it's diverse, and then it's just a bunch of bottles of Josh on the wall at a grocery store. do we have any wish list additions for the week, Barrett?
Oh, man. You know, I honestly don't. I really don't. I've been, you know, we talked about Uniqlo a little bit last week, and our buddy Phil Battaglia, who you may have heard on this podcast before, he was wearing, wait for it, a puffer jacket that I really quite liked on the trip, and it was Uniqlo.
His puffer jacket pretty much looked exactly like my vest that I was wearing on the trip, and I was very jealous of it. I was like, I love my vest in this, but if I could have this as a jacket, I would probably do that. And I was very jealous of it the entire trip.
Yeah, and so I peruse the outerwear section on Uniqlo quite often. I know that they have very well priced puffers and down jackets and all that type of stuff. So I'll throw a link in the if you're listening to this now. And the digest is not out yet. I'll put a link to a Uniqlo puffer that I'm feeling, but I don't have anything specific to pull up right this second.
Okay. Okay. That's okay with me. I'm in home mode at this point.
Right.
I'm very much needing to buy some stuff for my home. And so I'm putting a rug on here today.
Okay.
This is not a rug that I would have expected myself to really like when I first saw it when I was scrolling, but the price caught my eye just because rugs can get really out of hand. And when I saw that this one was priced more fairly than other ones, I was like, oh, okay, this works. It's from Soho Home, the home vertical of Soho House, and It's a green kind of checkered rug. And I'm not even trying to lean into the checkered that I said was in at the end of the last year. But it seems a little more muted when you put it in front or when you put it down on the ground. And so I'm kind of into it. And I think I might pull trig on this weekend.
Okay.
We have a little side area of our new place that's going to become a sitting area. We're going to have the vinyl set up there. It could be a dining room area, but it doesn't make sense for what we're doing. And so I kind of want a little pop of color. I want to kind of bring in the trees of outside of the windows and everything. And I think this rug's a good way to do it, especially based on the styling that they did with it in the photo here. I think I'm going to try to figure out a way to get this rug in the crib.
I need this chair. I like this chair.
That's a nice looking chair. I'm just in the market for any furniture right now. It's been tough, Barrett. I went to a store this weekend to buy a bunch of like necessities for myself, and I walked out with a bench. Just one single bench. $79 off of $500 though.
That's nice.
It was hard to not buy that bench.
From $500 down to $79?
I don't think it should have ever been $500. When I talked about it with someone, I said, why was this bench ever priced at anything over $175? But, you know, for $79, getting a really, really nice bench, I was pretty happy about that.
That's good bench prices, if you ask me.
Yeah. And we're a big bench price podcast.
Yeah.
People are always asking us
how much we bench price. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. So I price out a lot of benches.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's all she wrote for today, boys.
Another great episode in the books.
It feels good. It feels good. I am in holiday mode. And this cold is just making me feel like no one should actually be like, no one actually wants to go outside in this cold and
right.
No one actually wants to work. I feel like we just need to call it a week. For retail therapy, I think we are.